From the Midas of Roseburg studio, KQEN weather, 30% chance of rain late today and cloudy at 57. Rain likely, though, to this evening. Cloudy once again in 39. Tomorrow, rain likely, turning into showers in the afternoon, the high of 48. Tomorrow night, even more increasing chance of showers and cloudy. 34 are low by Sunday. Should be partly sunny. I thought there was supposed to snow on Sunday. Partly sunny with a high near 49.
That moved to Monday.
Oh, did it? Oh, it certainly did. I see that now. Cloudy Sunday night with a low of 35. And as Kyle said, a chance of rain and snow showers and a slight chance of rain showers on Monday and the high near 51. It's currently 45. KQEN News Time is 12:36.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by the Parent House. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, and thanks for being here in Oregon. The big story, of course, the walkout of the Senate and House members of the Republican Party over the cap and trade issue. State Representative Gary Lee from his undisclosed location this afternoon. Gary, give us kind of your overall thoughts about the walkout.
Well, thanks, Kyle. Thanks for having me on. And you didn't ask me how Hawaii was this morning, so. And I actually don't know because I'm not even close to Hawaii.
All right.
I'm in a place called Itacala, Washington.
Very good.
So anyways, thanks, Kyle. This is really a challenging time. I'm really disappointed that we Republican members of the legislature, we had to take this final stand, really to an important stand to really protect our constituents. So beginning with the full session and now continuing with the short session, the supermajority party has used numerous parliamentary maneuvers to ensure that their bills compromise elements. And I realize that some voters feel that our leaving the Capitol is to avoid our job, but in reality, our only job is to use all the means and methods to support the wishes of our constituents, like my House District 2. The supermajority in Salem has crushed any traditional options for modifying or stopping legislation that our constituents feel that's troubling, so we were left with our last option, which was to deny a quorum.
So talk about the walkout and just kind of how that, from your perspective, how that evolved into taking place.
Well, Kyle, this is what confuses me. We have had numerous surveys in the large metropolitan areas showing that 98% of the respondents, they want cap and trade put to the voters. Have you seen that survey from KGW8?
I haven't, but I've heard about various surveys, and I know the other Republican members I've talked to this week, while the numbers vary a little bit, have talked about overwhelming interest in having that on the ballot.
Yeah, the majority party has said no to every Republican amendment. They have without a clear explanation, and they refuse to send that measure before the voters. And they've chosen to really advance cap and trade without completely knowing the actual fiscal and revenue analysis. So Carol and I did a little analysis on our own. If gas went up 50 cents, and we think that's the very minimum, it would cost us about $1,250 a year. And that does not include what it would cost for extra heating, what it would cost for goods that you buy, because, you know, I think 90% of all goods come from transportation. So there's a lot of stuff that we just don't know about it. And we never really got the actual fiscal and revenue analysis. But also, and this is really important, we have 27 counties. And if you've found it on Facebook, it is amazing. It's like 90% of Oregon, 27 counties who have issued formal declarations requesting that the matter be put to the voters. On our way out of Oregon, we stopped and we met with several county commissioners, and they are all in solidarity on this. You know, they absolutely understand in rural Oregon, this is really going to hurt us. And now we have the Republican and Senate caucuses willing to leave the state, deny quorum, and face the backlash from leadership, all in order to give the voters back their right to vote. And yet, in all of that, the governor has refused to table this item and put it before the voters. We are quickly approaching the point where our state is going to split between who wants their vote to count and those who simply want to use a supermajority in order to drive through legislative agendas. And Kyle, look, I understand. I represent a rural part of Oregon. And really, when you look at it, probably 85% of the state is really rural. And that's what our constituents want. And I understand when you look at the speaker or the governor, they represent that large metropolitan block. And I get it. I understand. But this is kind of one of those things where one size does not fit all. We have to be absolutely sure that we're representing both. And sometimes you can't do that. And in this case is the perfect example. If we can't do that, if there's no separation, then let the voters decide that. That's not for me to make a decision for 4 million people in Oregon. And that's what the Republican caucus is standing up for.
And yesterday, Senate Republican leader Herman Bertschinger made the comment again that lawmakers from the GOP would be willing to come back to pass the bills that, as he terms it, the short session was intended for if cap and trade either came off the table or was referred to the voters.
And if you remember back the last time when the Senate walked out, Bertschinger and the president, Courtney, they actually sat down and worked together. And they came back and they passed 120 bills that actually were good bills. They had bipartisan support. So there was a great cooperation between those. We don't have that right now with the speaker, and I don't understand why. I asked the speaker personally, would we and could we send this to the voters and we'd be back? And in her answer, and I respectfully understand this, was, you know, they've worked 2.5 years on this. They really, really believe that cap and trade is one of the most important issues that they want to, you know, that they want to take before the legislature and approve. I get that. I understand that. But when it affects us so deeply in the rural areas that we may not have the industry that we currently have if this is passed, then I really believe the voters should have the last chance to really say yes or no on this.
Obviously, there's a lot of back and forth from both sides about this. One of the comments I heard yesterday from someone who was opposed to the cap and trade measure, they felt that it was even ineffective in achieving much in terms of helping with the climate change and the carbon footprint issues and all of that. And for a lot of money being spent, it would not have much of a return.
You know, and that's one of the reasons why I think it was so important that we got some of these amendments in cap and trade. I have the utmost respect for Representative David Brock Smith. He represents District 1, which is over in the coast, Brookings to Coos Bay and then into Douglas County. He had great amendments. And one of the most important amendment was the fact that the sequestration of carbon is so apparent in timber. And if we did thinning and all of these other things to stop these horrible forest fires, we could actually do more good taking bad carbon out of the atmosphere, more than probably what our cars create. And that's not even in the bill. And then when you look at the cost, and like I think the numbers are saying somewhere between $600 to the average family, you know, that's quite a bit of money. But then when you look at the fact that it will have a 0.003%, I think it's 1/3 of 1% on the global, you know, climate. Oh my gosh, if you're going to send rural Oregon into become welfare counties and it has no effect on the global climate, what are we doing here? I mean, I'm all about, you know, allowing this. If the voters in Oregon say, by golly, we don't mind spending $600 a family or $1,000 or whatever it might be, because we think that 1/3 of 1% is worth it, then let's do it. But how should 90 legislators decide for 4 million people in Oregon? Something's wrong there. And the fact that we are denying quorum because we're standing up for not 70% of the people or 80% in my district. I'm standing up for 100%. I want the people who want cap and trade, who want to take the climate control and do those things. I want them all to have a voice on it. If I vote on that, they don't get a voice, and that's not wrong. So that's not right. So I'm standing up.
As we've been talking to different people this week about it, as I said, it's been getting a lot of attention. One of the interviews I had earlier in the week was State Senator Floyd Prezansky, who talked about not getting paid, you know, while not being at the Capitol. What are your thoughts there?
You know, I listen to Senator Prezansky, and I respect his view, but I actually respectfully disagree with him. I don't get paid to be in Salem. I get paid to support my district. So we're denying the quorum, just as the same as the Democrats did in 2001. And I get paid to represent wherever I am. And most of the time I have an office in downtown Roseburg. And most of the time, you know, we're there. Actually have staff right now that's working in Roseburg. They're going to meetings. I'm talking to them on a regular basis. They let me know where committee bills are and things that are going on. I think that I'm doing just as good a job now as I would be in Salem. We have a remote office set up. If you go to my Facebook page, you can see pictures of my wife and I. We're working. This is what we do all day. Whether we're in Salem or whether we're in Roseburg, this is what we do. And it's business as usual. As I await our leaders to discuss our reentry, I'm not in leadership, but I fully understand what is going on right now. And I know that they've offered one thing, send cap and trade to the voters. And then, just like I said earlier, what the Senate did was they came back in a bipartisan effort and they passed 120 bills that basically keep Salem and all the agencies going, and we will do the same exact thing. This is the necessary legislation that the short session was intended for.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back. State Representative Gary Leaf, the interview podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, and you can hear all of the interviews we've done this week, both on the Morning Conversation and on Inside Douglas County, many of them revolving around these legislative issues from Salem. They're all up at 541radio.com. 1247, News Radio 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1249, News Radio 1240, KQEN, Lars Larson at 1. On Monday's program, Melanie Frummer, the executive director of what used to be called Battered Persons Advocacy. They announced a name change a few days ago, and it's in the process of being phased in. We'll tell you what the new name is, the reasons for making the change, and more about Battered Persons Advocacy following their recent fundraiser on Monday's program. State Representative Gary Leaf from his undisclosed location. A little bit of a contrasting situation here from both sides of the aisle. Talked earlier about Senate Republican Leader Herman Birchinger of Grants Pass. He sent a follow-up letter to Senate President Peter Courtney yesterday urging him to, quote, return to the intent of the 35-day short session by focusing on budget adjustments and policy fixes. Meantime, in an OPB story, House Democrats now say they're going to use subpoenas to require absent Republicans' attendance in the Capitol, and in fact, that would be by to appear before a committee on March 5th. That vote was taken yesterday. Gary, I presume that you've already heard about that.
Yeah, we had a caucus call this morning and last night about that. And you know, Kyle, I'm just afraid that the governor and many of the legislative supermajority members, they've just become tone deaf to rule Oregon. If you look up metaphors for tone deaf, you'll see something like not being aware of the mood or sensitivities of your listener. And the current actions in Salem give that appearance, that we as elected legislators serve at the pleasure of the governor or are somehow bound to a set of procedural requirements. But I would share with my fellow legislators and the governor that I'm responsible to the constituents of my House District 2, and within that group, those who elected me. So it's my job to represent the wishes of my district. It's unfortunate that the legislative leadership feels that they can use civil court proceedings in order for me to compel to ignore the wishes of my own district.
Now, under state,
and I don't think that dragging the Republicans back to Salem under house arrest will do much for the image of leadership. And besides, the Oregon Constitution in Article 4, Section 9 says we, as elected leaders, are immune from civil action penalty as long as it doesn't rise to a felony. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Well, and you're actually going where I was because while legislative processes are in a session, et cetera, there is that element in the Constitution. Under state law, normally people who fail to abide by subpoenas can be compelled by a judge's order. But even with all of that in the mix, depending on how you interpret the rules, of course, the question is, how will they find all of you that have left the state? And from what I can tell so far, at least you're all telling me, you really don't know where each other even are.
No, we don't. But, you know, it's funny. One of my priority bills this short session was adding different language to the word subpoenas. So if you have a missing person and you come up with a subpoena and you go to a cell company or to a bank and say, you know, we would like to get access to those records, they'll basically rip it up, throw it in the trash can, because a subpoena is just a piece of paper. It doesn't actually make the case that you have to be there for a particular reason. It's just a piece of paper. So I'm not even sure that it has any legal legitimacy.
House Republican Leader Christine Drazen issued a statement last night calling the subpoena idea, quote, strong-arm tactics, and that probably goes with what you said about the image that that might portray if they tried to, in fact, do that.
You know, my whole goal in Salem, as I represent my House District 2 constituent, is to work together. And we have provided so many great amendments to be able to work through cap and trade and some of these other things in a bipartisan manner. But when the supermajority basically disregards every single thing you're trying to do to work together, then that's where we're at an impasse right now. And that's wrong. You know, I'm one of those guys that works across the aisle all the time. A lot of my legislation that I propose is very bipartisan. You know, I have a CASA bill that I think we have over 40 members of the House out of 60 that have signed on to. That's the kind of stuff we want to work on. And the things that we can't, let's set aside. Cap and trade, let's let the voters do this. Let's work on the things that we can do, and then we won't have these impasses.
We have a deadline, I believe it's the 8th of March. The constitutionally mandated 35-day session would wrap up by that point. What do you think the likelihood is that the Republicans aren't coming back during that period of time?
Well, when you know, I'm not in leadership, so I can't tell you everything that's going on, but I did listen yesterday and this morning when we talked about it. You know, Representative Drazen is an amazing individual. She really has a strong Republican caucus right now. We're all gathered together. And our discussion this morning was, she's been working, you know, with the speaker and saying, you send cap and trade back to the voters, and we will come back and we will pass all the necessary bills that are funding and other legislative tweaks that we have to. We'll be back there on the 8th. Which is the last day. We will take care of all of those things. But I'm not sure, you know, where Speaker Kotek is on this, but I know that we've made those offers, and I know we'll adhere to those. So I'm hopeful that we can work through this, get back to that, and fix all these things the way the short session was made to be. This isn't a long session. And when you have something as complicated as cap and trade, how can you talk about that in 5 weeks? How, you know, when people drive 5 hours away to talk about that in a committee and they literally get 1 minute to talk about it, that's wrong.
Have you had any communication with a Democratic colleague since you've left the state?
Yeah, actually, I had Representative Kenny Geyer. There was a bill that we're working on that they took an amendment out of it, and she was really concerned about it. So I said that I would meet or talk with the tri-chairs to try and do some stuff. I'm working all day long on my committees, watching what's going on. I've got a couple of things that I've got to get with Representative Rayfield on. So, yeah, I'm working.
State Representative Gary Leaf, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Go on my Facebook page. There's a lot of information on there. Thank you all.
1257 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by The Parent House. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.